accession number 19660, reel 5.
Bill Harvey, reel 5. I just asked you when you were in Aden about.
Yes, I did practically a month in Aden.
You said that it was just before it was handed over to the Arabs.
No, that was the second time. I'd been out again, you see. I don't know whether it was the following year or the year after. I think there was 2 years lapse before I went out again.
And what was your experience when you were in Aden? What was it like?
Well, you was on the alert all the time. You took your gun to you took your weapon to bed with you. You slept underneath it. We're on the Dala Road. We're building an extension of Dala Road right up to the Yemeni border. That was the whole regiment then. We were a regiment then.
That was 131, you mean?
131 regiment, yeah. And we used to take over at different places to search people, you know, different posts, areas, all in contact by radio. And we used to do the brigade headquarters, which was in Little Aden.
You mean on guard?
Yeah, guard duties. We took up guard duties there. And that was when the, I don't know what it's illustrious, or the Ark Royal, came in and the Royal Marines did it. And the Royal Marine was shot down in Aden.
A Royal Marine what?
Royal Marine Commando. They were doing the Royal Marines, the actual Royal Marines. I think they sent a detachment in to just try them out on guard duties, you know. I suppose it's training for them as well. It was on the ship, so they sent, I think they sent about a platoon of them. They're doing guard duties in Aden, and I was one of the youngest young lads. He was only about 18, I think he was. He was shot down.
Were you ever fired on yourself in Aden?
In anger? Yeah, but I couldn't see what I was firing at. All I can see was where they were firing. I had a Bren gun. I was on the Bren gun, because then I was an NCO then. You see, when we, where we were working, which was outside on the Dala, what we call the Dala Road, and it was different, like there was a squadron there, and a squadron there, three squadrons all spread out, extending on the Dala Road. And what our job was we were just out there to do this part of the road as engineers, you see.
And so you use the Bren gun when you're doing the work on the Dala Road?
On the Dala Road, yeah. Only we had pits, what you call pits, and you had a stone wall. What our job was at night time, you had a guard on, you had just a small guard, you see, all round at positions, you see. Now, I was in the corner tent one night, the first night we got there, at this camp area, you see, and there was a little stone wall all the way round like that, about that high, about a foot and a half, and we were inside of it, all barbed wire, just, you know, concertina wire all round. With the exception of the toilets were outside, but we used to bring them in at night time, the toilets, bring them in the bad wire area, you see. But during the daytime, they were pushed well out, the latrines and all that. Because we used to have so many, you know, the Adenese from the villages. We used to employ about 30 of them. To working in there, and I was in charge of so many of them.
Working on the road, you mean?
No, working in the camp area then. Different jobs you got, you see, and I was in charge of them for about 4 days, in charge of them.
How did they work?
They worked reasonably well. What mostly what they were doing, they're mostly digging and doing outside concertina wire and all like that. They're just strengthening the areas, say, what we thought wasn't strong enough. Well, and they had to be out of the camp at 5 o'clock at night. You say they'd finish and then they'd just go to the village where they, wherever they were.
So, can you describe what happened when you had to open fire with the Bren?
Well, what really happened, the first night, they had a go at our camp, and it missed. They were in between us, and they're mortar bombs. They just exploded outside the camp area. But we all stood too. You see, we stood two for a period, and I should mention this would be night time, be about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. No particular time, but if we did, anything went off, it just shook the camp area, you see. And the next camp, they didn't go for our camp, they went for the camp further down, which were Royal Scots. They were 299. And not 290, 131 regiment. They were the regiment, you see, further down the road. And that was the next night. And they got direct hits on it. And they killed two. And I think just on 13 injured, small arms fire. As they got up to run to the post, the positions, that's when they were hit, when the damage was done. They just pumped small arms fire in, you see. One of the officers had a bullet go right through there, went in right and went right out there.
Right through his face?
Yeah. He looked very bad, but helicopters come in and took him out. Come and picked him up. Took him out.
But was your camp hit?
Pardon?
Was your camp hit?
Our camp wasn't hit at all, no. But what I'm going by the first night. Undergoing the first night, that was another night when the other camp was hit. Wasn't our camp. That was further down the road.
So you opened fire with a Bren gun against a target?
Well, it looked like a target. But we don't know, because it was night time. You just spray where you saw these flashes come up where they were firing at us, you just fired over there. Whether you hit anything, you don't know. So it wasn't a close quarter action, anything like that. Because we asked to send a patrol out from the brigade headquarters, but they said, no, you're not there to fight, you're there to further and work on the road, you see. They wanted desperately to send a troop out and chase them off wherever they were. No, we didn't see none of it. Only when they tried to hit our camp the first night. That was the only part of it. The next part was the other camp, and that was the Royal Scots, and that's when they lost the sergeant major, the pay sergeant, and I think there's 13 wounded in different places. They weren't enough. I don't think you say there's only small arms fire. I think mostly of them. I know one of their officers were hit pretty badly in the ear, but when I saw him about 6 months after, you didn't even know. You could just see a little scar gone there and where it had gone out.
In his cheek.
Yeah.
How frightening was it working on the Dala Road?
Well, it's frightening all the time. You're on alert all the time. You was tired. You was on a lot for the simple reason. When we were going down, I broke down. My wagon broke down when we were going up to the Dala Road. So they just left me with a section of blokes, you see, with an officer, a platoon officer, and a section of blokes, because my wagon broke down. The half shaft went. Broke. Very rough terrain as you're going along, you know. and I had all explosive on. So I transferred the explosive onto another wagon, a wagon. Until then, and then we called up Little Aidan for the Remy to come out. And we just deployed the troop out around, you know, keep any, because we're in a dangerous area, what you call a dangerous area, anyhow. But nothing happened. The only thing happened was the Aidanese coming up with, on the motorbikes with the Coca-Cola. Look at this. And they did a roaring trade while we were there. I took some lovely photographs of camel trains, because it seemed to be on the route, camel trains. They were passing quite frequent. And then another lot came up, all on a lorry. So the officer said, well, stop that lorry. Corporal, he said. I was a corporal then. Stop that lorry, Corporal. He said, go out and stop the lorry, and just went over. I was frightened to death, to be honest. Well, I wasn't frightened, actually. I went over, and they had a body, and they all got round. They all stood round. They had a body in the middle, a dead Arab.
What's that?
Oh, didn't do nothing. They just said they're going to bury him. I don't know where they were going to take him. He was out in the desert, you see. You didn't know. He wasn't in any dry wadi. It wasn't a road. It was just a track. I'd imagine it'd be the camel track, because that's where most of the camel trains used to come down. I took some lovely photos of them. And one shaked them, because the women walk behind, like, don't they? Or mostly, and they're all veiled. And I thought, well, it'd be lovely photos. And I was taking this one, and I see this Arab there go for his dagger, like, he wasn't pleased, because they don't like you taking photos, you know. They think it's, they have some sort of feeling reference taking photos. It's a spirit. They'd look at it as a spirit or something. And the officer told me, he said, they don't like photos taken, Harry. I got some nice photos of camel train, and when I sent them to be developed with the heat, I put them in my kit bag, you see, as the roll of film such you there. When I got home, they'd all melted. I think it was the heat mostly.
What did the attitude of the Aidanese seem to be towards you?
Aidanese, quite nice. The Aidanese themselves, quite nice. They did go on strike once. That's when I went on the first time. They went on strike for some reason, because British troops had gone into a worship place to search for a gunman. You see, I think so many were, you know, and then so they decided to go on strike. So they had to go on strike. They were warned if they didn't go on strike, they'd kill them. So what staff we had in the camp area, they all went on strike that day, you see. They were made to go on strike. I suppose they were ordered to, really. Mm. So it's all back to the grindstone for the rest of the day.
How did you like being in Aidan?
Well, it was an experience. It was an experience, really. Different experience and a different way of living. And those that were working in the camp area, and what food, if we had any food left, I used to put it all in a big tray, you know, and put it in the middle there. They had fish, their fish, most of their meals, dried fish, really. It's like rice pudding, like, you know, and they just help themselves and all that, like that.
So why did you put the food on the tray?
I went to, because they all looked, they wanted to eat it, you see, so I just go, good, and then they start to eat it. They won't eat it unless you tasted it, you know. And they say, if you eat it, they're very suspicious, you see, on food, I don't know why. Mind you, if they don't like pork. They don't eat pork.
So
they have a different eating habits to us.
You just used to put this food out for the civilians?
On the tray, yeah. On a Dixie lid or something like that, and they used to help themselves and eat it, especially the young ones. Because there were some of them, the young boys, 12, 14, yeah, they'll come in the camp area for the day.
And you were also in Cyprus, was that before Aden?
Previous to that, I've been to Cyprus.
When were you in Cyprus?
Well, I went to Cyprus about 7 times. I went to Cyprus because we have an engineer unit out there, you see. I think it was the 22nd Engineer Regiment was always out there, and our own airborne engineer unit were always there. Everywhere we went, we had the 9th Independent Royal Engineers para unit. They're all para squadron. 9th Paris Squadron, obviously. And they were our, what we call our supporting unit. They used to something go in advance and get all their things ready, you see. If we went abroad anywhere, that implies, so Aden, Germany, they were with us in Germany. We mostly in the forest, the New Forest area in Germany.
But in Cyprus, what kind of work were you doing when you went there?
All roads. Repairing the roads and making them so when they have the drainage under and rebuilding them, you know. That's what the work we were doing. Parachuting.
Parachute training?
Your parachute training we did there, yeah.
Were there...
Up in the Truro mountain area, funny enough.
Trudos,
round that way, in that area, yeah.
Why were you up there?
For training. It's our annual training, you see. We did approximately 3 weeks out there with those that can get the time off. Well, I was employed by the army, so I could get time off for everything, you see.
Were you ever in any operations in Cyprus?
No, we weren't. When we were out there, when we first got out there, where 9th Squadron were on the operations, you see, they were doing the operations, and that's when they nearly got, Grievous. They nearly got him. He got away up in the Truro Mountain area, he was.
But
he got away.
Did you do any operations?
You know, you can't be back out for two nights on the job if you're doing a road or a bridge area. A lot of little bridges and little places where the roads are collapsed with the water getting under it and washing it away, and we were redoing them all up again, you see.
You mean the culverts?
Yes, the culverts, yeah.
Did you ever come under fire in Cyprus?
No. No.
Did you ever come across any disturbances or hostility there?
Well, I think disturbances was through lashes when they were let go on the night time. And that was in the British base area. And I think they beat several of chaps up, so they all got in the heads that we're going down there tonight and wrecked the joint or something like that, you know.
Wrecked which joint?
Wrecked the joint where the trouble was. That was the only trouble. So what happened, to cool them down, everybody had to remain in the billet area for 3 days till they cooled down, because it boiled up with the paras mostly. About 6 paras got beaten up by a gang of, I think, the Greek Cypriots. You know, but other than that, I think the army jumped in straight away and confined them all to barracks for 3 days. Nobody was to go down, that was out of bounds. What was the base area? Do you remember?
Larnaca?
Larnaca, around that area, yeah.
Did you know these paras who were beaten up?
No. No, they were, I think they were, some of the other units, you know, got into trouble, because I think the paras were out of there, the 1st Battalion was out there, because they were up in the Truro Mountain chasing the, they were doing the job, you see, up there. And I think some of them, when they got back to the their own base area, they went out one night and caused a bit of disturbance. So, and four of them, I think, got badly beaten up. They were hospitalised. And they all, you know, got it in the head. Word went round, we're all going down into the town and do the place up. But I think the army stepped in and said, no, he confined the barracks for 3 days till he cool off. Other than that, I didn't hear nothing really serious.
So which did you like being in the best, Cyprus or Aden?
Well, Cyprus, you're trying to get to know the people. And the best people I got on with was the... not the Greek Cypriot, the Turkish Cypriots, we got on well with. They were genuine, but I think when it came to talking, we were in Larnaca and having a drink, you know, and whatnot, and if we talked to a Greek Cypriot, you know, we were very vague. What he talked about, but with a Turkish Cypriot, it was genuine. You know, I go for ask for transport, and that was a Turkish Cypriot. He was for speaking the language. You know, his interpreter, and we had a Greek Greek Cypriot as well. You see, but they weren't very nice to each other. You know, while they were in with the army, was they behaved themselves, you see. But somehow I couldn't trust a Greek Cypriot, where I would have trusted the Turkish Cypriot. They were genuine. We used to leave our wagons in a place, and then nearly all Turkish Cypriots, you know, on doing security guards, all the different places. And we wanted to go out in Larnaca for about a couple of hours. We were taking these lorries back to the where we got them from. We borrowed so many of them from a pool, you see. And when we stopped, we thought, well, we'd go have a couple of hours in Larnaca, as long as you're all back again. As the main thing was, I had about four wagons, and was putting them somewhere. And when I talked to this Turkish Cypriot, who was a security bloody, we bring them in there, like, you know, brought them in there, smashing. They're under guard, you see. But couldn't do that with the Greeks. They take all the ruddy wheels off and you lose. But he won't even take any cigarettes. I offered him about 50 cigarettes. He won't take a cigarette. Won't take nothing. They're very good, and they're willing. That was the only thing that made me happy when I got, because I noticed all the Turkish Cypriots, the farmers, they got the worst part of the land, what Macarius was it? Macarius, when he took over. And when we were out there, the petition hadn't started then. And I noticed all the Greek Cypriots had the best, and farmers had the best part of the land, and all the Turkish Cypriots had the worst part of the land. They dig about 6 inches down, they come to solid rock, you see. So if they wanted water, they had to get special drills and drill in for the water and all like that. Everything was hard for the Turkish Cypriot, and I was highly delighted. I don't think we'd been home long when they invaded the Turkish airborne came in, and I was glad in one way. Of course, I think it took them, and they're still partitioned, aren't they? No.
Yes.
I was highly delighted when the Turkish went in. It was coming to it. You know, it was boiling up that way. You could see it was boiling up that way as you're walking around. I think the Turkish people were Turkish Cypriots. They were, I should imagine, they were very pleased and all because they got what they wanted. But anyhow, it was poor. They were poor people, the farmers. They weren't rich or anything like that. But so what I used to see, Macarius, even the Greek Cypriot farmers were just the same. They had to work hard. They had to put their little plot, little square building up, you know, little breeze blocks they were, all breeze blocks there, areas. One of them got married, he was a great Cypriot, one of the interpreters. And he said, would you like to come to my and see my wife, you know? And about three of us went there, and it was one little breeze block. He said, we're having the bedroom there. All I could see was the bedroom was just a little hole in the wall, you know, it was where they used to sleep. And she had a baby. And the meal, I couldn't eat it. I was, you know, and then the spoon, that was in that little coffee cup. And it looked like snails to me. Snails, I don't know what, fish most of the snails. But, I couldn't eat. I just, as he'd heard it, he said, no, I can't. Yeah, I didn't eat it, really.
And he was a Greek Cypriot in
He was a Greek Cypriot himself, yeah. He was just on the outskirts, what's the other village? The other town. Near the airport.
Limassol?
Limassol. That's right. They were on the outskirts of Limassol. Where these were building their own little areas. They have little plots. Macarius gave them the little plots and they had to build their own house. It wasn't properly built, he only had one big room and they gradually extend on it, you know, I've got to have the sons in there and the sons there. And he said to her, have we got my suit ready? I've got to be so and so. No, yes, it's laid out on the bed. She's the weight on a man and foot, her husband, right? But I got on well with the Turkish Cypriot more than the Greek Cypriot, really.
So when did you retire from the army?
1973 when I retired from the army. When they caught up with them on my age. I'm now 80 this next year.